Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is the West propaganda war against Russia beginning to show cracks? The military situation in Ukraine is being revealed is grim, with anything approaching optimism fading. Nonetheless, the Biden administration and the Uniparty soldier on, wasting Ukrainian blood. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Kıvırk Almasan in Berlin. He is founder of Syriana Analysis. And in Vienna, we have Alexander Markovich. He is head of the Suvorov Institute in Vienna. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's go to Berlin. It's very interesting. Over the last few news cycles, there seems to be some revealing information, if we can put it gently, is that the Wall Street Journal is talking about how the Biden administration knew that the counteroffensive that that was so heralded by Zelensky and the Kiev regime, that they had no real air cover. And anyone knows, any military, I'm not a military person, but I know you don't go into a major conflict without any air cover to protect your troops and your tanks and whatnot here. This is an amazing admission on their part. It shows this is all about politics and ideology, not about security, and certainly not about Ukraine. Your thoughts?
Peter, some people may think I'm exaggerating, but my heart breaks when I see all these fallen people in Ukraine, where they are with tens of thousands of Ukrainians are dying in this meat grinder, and I'm not exaggerating when I call it a meat grinder. I'm a political journalist. I followed the Syrian war very closely, and I know what fortification means, and I know what mined territories means. And in Ukraine right now, this is the most mined territory in the world and the most secured fortification in the world. And Russia established these mine areas and the fortifications in a way that Ukraine will need very strong artilleries, and they have to bomb the fortifications for weeks at least. We're talking about probably 1 to 2 months to 3 months of bombing of Russia's fortifications and aerial cover before the attacking forces can advance in the Russian-held territories in Ukraine. We haven't seen any of this. They pushed the Ukrainian forces into this meat grinder, and now the American press acknowledges that at least 20% of the newly supplied hardware, advanced tanks that they provided to Ukraine are destroyed. And let's be honest, Peter, if the American press says 20%, you can multiply that to 2 or 3. That's like they're trying to do a narrative management, right? Because
look, a very good example of that, there was some news reports over the last few news cycles how a few thousand rifles went missing, a few thousand grenades went missing, which we all know is a cover story for massive theft of this military hardware. So you're absolutely right. Let me go to Alexander. You know, Alexander, it becomes more and more obvious that the Biden administration is indifferent to the casualties and the economic destruction, not only of Ukraine, but where you gentlemen live, in Europe.
Yeah, you're totally right. For the Biden administration, this whole war is just about ideology, about series of influences, and they don't give a damn about the people living in Europe or the people living in Ukraine. We are just some chess figures for them, which they can move at will. And therefore, you have, of course, these catastrophic losses, because you could take it for granted if it would be about American soldiers fighting there in Ukraine en masse, the Biden administration would never risk these huge loss numbers. And I guess also the Biden administration would not be ready to risk an enormous economic recession, which is taking place in Europe right now because of these sanction wars against Russia. And therefore, of course, it's not about the US caring for Europe or protecting us from so-called Russian aggression, but they simply want to ice cold push further their own globalist agenda and, of course, their own power politics. And this is the only reason why this war is still running, because if the Biden administration would have been really interested in the good of the Ukrainians and in the good of the Europeans, they would have stopped this war last year in April when it was possible. And then Russia...
There you go. That's exactly where I wanted to go. Exactly. Let me go back to Kvorka in Berlin. What Alexander was getting to is really at the heart of all of this, is if the West, particularly the United States and the UK, had wanted to see a resolution to a conflict that should have never happened in the first place, they had an opportunity in Istanbul and they walked away from it. And as a result, why would the Russians engage with the same players for some kind of resolution? They have no reason to. They, you know, who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? Who sabotaged the Black Sea Grain Initiative? It's the West that has done this repeatedly. I have read account after account of account about the Black Sea Grain Initiative. The Russians walked away from it, but nobody explains why. Go ahead in Berlin.
Peter, they didn't only walk away from the negotiations in late February 2022 and early April 2023. There was a 2022. There was a big opportunity to sign a peace deal, and the UK and the United States told the Ukrainians that you're not allowed to sign on this, and we're going to give you all the weapons and ammunition that you need to continue this fight. And what happened?
I thought it was nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine.
but now who ran out of ammunition? We are in late July 2023, and they are now acknowledging that they have to supply these different type of weapons now, the cluster bombs, to Ukraine because they ran out of ammunition. What happened is very, very ugly, especially with the Nord Stream pipeline blast. They didn't only withdraw from the negotiations, but they blew up the Nord Stream pipelines because they knew that Germany will suffer economically, and they knew that Germany will suffer on an energy sector. Therefore, they knew that Germany can back off on a later stage in this war in its support to Ukraine. Therefore, they blew it up so that Germany stays in this war till the end. And now, unfortunately, I would say Germany is a hostage for this war. And I live in Germany, and I hope the German government won't come after me for saying this, but they're hostage for this war. This is not their war in Ukraine. And I'm just reminded by this famous quote, to be America's enemy can be dangerous, but to be America's friend is fatal. And it's happening in front of our eyes every day. And people still say, oh, but we have to save Ukraine. I don't understand why a person like me sitting here in Berlin, nobody asked my opinion. Why should I fund this war? I'm paying, if all the bills are skyrocketed here and the salaries are the same. But the people are waking up. And that's why when you see the polls, the ruling coalition, which is the two bigger parties, are the Social Democrats and the Greens, they have less points than the AfD, the far-right group. And the people are increasingly supporting the AfD for the socioeconomic situation and because of the Ukraine war. And if there is an early election now, the AfD could win even on the CDU, on the Merkel's party, if they mobilize themselves well. But you know what's going to happen? Nobody will form a coalition with the AfD here, and there will be a stalemate.
I think it's the Sweden model, like they did in Sweden. They would not let the major party rule. They would work a coalition around it.
Yeah.
And Alexander... It's very interesting. The Istanbul process was brought up. I want our viewers to understand what was being discussed at Istanbul last year. The Zelensky regime was being asked to give up what it did not have, the Donbass and Crimea. They didn't have control of it. What the Russians are saying, look, you don't have control of it. Sign this, and then hostilities end. That was a great deal, a deal that Ukraine will never get again, as we all know. Alexander.
Yes, I see it the same as you. They basically had a big chance to end this conflict. Unfortunately, they were overruled by, back in those days, Boris Johnson and the United Kingdom. And also, of course, the United States said, no, we want to prolong this conflict. We want to hurt Russia at every cost. And yeah, therefore, we are now at this very moment where the United States don't have any regular artillery ammunition anymore to send it to Ukraine. This is the reason why they are sending cluster bombs to Ukraine. Right. So in order that the human misery and the suffering even grows and explodes even more. And I guess if they are accelerating the conflict at this rate, they will sooner or later also send their fighter jets maybe and use other measures in order to prolong this conflict and make it even bloodier. And if you're looking at the current discussion in Poland, they're even planning to send a combined Polish-Lithuanian force to Ukraine in order to prolong this conflict. So I really hope that some people in Europe come to their senses, especially in the political community.
Well, in the second half of the program, I want to ask the two Europeans why you can't come to your senses. But since we're talking about the escalation ladder, Kvark, let me go to you back in Berlin. I don't believe in this F-16 myth. I don't. I think it's a lot of talk. I don't think they're ever going to send them. The timeline gets pushed further and further in the future. You know why, my friend? Because they're burned like any other plane in over the air, in the airspace of Ukraine. And Western arms manufacturers know it. How do you sell an F-16 or an F-whatever when it can be easily shot down by current technology, Russian technology? They won't send them because they're afraid they'll burn. Go ahead.
Peter, if you remember, just a few weeks ago, there was this big hype about the tanks. Free the Leopards. Free the tanks. Here in Berlin, in front of the Chancellery, all these people who won't go to Ukraine to fight, but demanding the German government to supply this weaponry to the Ukrainian side. And we told them back then, a few Leopards, 10, 20, 30, they're not going to change the equation. We know this in our first hand in Syria, in Idlib, when Turkey used these Leopards, they were all smashed by the Russian forces very quickly. We know it, and first experience, we have seen them. And now this all this talk about the F-16. Okay, let's suppose Ukraine has an F-16 now. Where are they going to operate this F-16? All their airports can be bombed, and they can go non-operational. Are they going to use
the territories? There's no airstrip in Ukraine that can support it. They don't have any maintenance crew to support it. How they're going to get the munitions there, nobody knows. This is, again, that's why it's all media propaganda. Finish up before we go to the break. Go ahead.
Maybe they're going to use the Polish territories to as an operational point or a departure point for this.
It really shows who has war aims here, okay? Yeah. The Poles want Kresy back, old former lands. Then the Ukrainians can take a hand at it. And then in central Ukraine, they'll say, well, we're going to go with Russia. Good job, Joe. You just eliminated Ukraine as a sovereign state. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Сотні.
Хочуть джілехіс самі шемтхова да фіксі да інформація пірулавсас. Сашіші да ава дебі шемтхова да лет алуру шедегі айч араші джілехіс діагнозит ерті мама кацігар.
In Guatemala haben die USA die Eingeborenen mit Syphilis angesteckt und daran experimentiert, wie sich das entwickelt. Das sind alles Dinge, die die USA schon längst offen zugegeben haben.
Американці активно займаються розробками біологічного оружия, а используют насіком убийц, що являється компонентом біологічного оружия.
Not developing biological or chemical weapons inside Ukraine.
Африканська чума смені знову на Сумщині.
Холера в українському Миколаєві. Нові случаї ботулізму.
Потім вони будуть просто продавати вакцини і лікарства від цих болезней, які самі ж сюди і привезли.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lell. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, I want to go back to Alexander in Vienna. You said, you know, when somebody in Europe comes to their senses, tell me more, friend, because I've been waiting for that. It's devastating to see the democracy deficit in Europe when it comes to this topic, because I know many people in Europe that have been on this program, but have said, I have to take a pass because I'm afraid. So, it's a speech issue. It's a democracy issue. This is an extraordinary thing. And I thought these were rule-based order countries, and they were exporting their model to the rest of the world. It's full of contradictions. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. So what is universalism? What is rule-based order to the West is universalism to the rest, in order to somehow change a famous quote of Samuel Huntington. And I guess if you are looking right now at a lot of European governments, maybe in France, maybe in Berlin, or also maybe in Austria, these people are slowly realizing that this war is not winnable for Europe. And therefore, they somehow have to change the strategy and adapt it. And it's very interesting that over the course of the last weeks, we could see somehow a change in tone in the speeches of various Western leaders. For example, the Czech president, Pavel, comes to my mind, who told Zelensky more or less directly that he has now a time slot ranging until the end of 2023. And if he's not able to achieve the results of his counteroffensive, then there will be actually talks between the West and Russia on how to end this conflict. And I guess Pavel is not the only European politician.
Well, and he's a hardliner. I mean, he's not soft on Russia.
Yeah, of course.
The former NATO commander. I mean, he probably knows something here. But Alexander, it's really quite, I've been, like the both of you, I've been watching this, laser focused on this, but I have to say, and I think people are going to attack me for saying it, but Zelensky was the only one that made any logical sense in Vilnius, okay? I mean, you said to do this, and this, and then this will happen, and I've done everything, and you're leaving me out in the cold. It's extraordinary, okay? I mean, I've always said, future historians will explain. Let me go to our guest in Berlin. But we need future psychologists to explain how this all happened, why so many leaders would go against their own national interests, and in the case Ukraine, against its own people. Go ahead in Berlin.
Peter, do you really need a psychologist, for example, to when you watch a politician here in the West talking and you missing that this guy is lying or not?
Obvious. I think we all want to have some kind of medication against it.
Yeah, okay. It's very obvious when they speak about values, when they speak about democracy, when they speak about our way of life. We know they're lying about these cases. We know that this issue is a geopolitical conflict, and the United States want to split and to draw a line in Ukraine so that Russia cannot have good economic relations with Germany and with Western Europe. We know these things, but we are not, Peter, able to speak freely. Look, I'm not German. I live here, and every day when I open my letters, I expect a letter from some court here in Germany because of some tweet maybe I made, or maybe I said something on Russia Today, because they follow everything and they're coming after journalists and they are persecuting journalists. They're closing bank accounts. I mean, this is not a joke. So this is not about democracy. Please spare us this. We are fighting for democracy and everything, because if this was about democracy, then you should urge Zelensky first to become a Democrat and not ban the political parties and not to come after the churches there and not to support neo-Nazi anti-Semite groups. Everyone here who has an opinion, let's say a different opinion on the war in Ukraine, is framed as a far right. But who is supporting the far right in Ukraine? Who is supporting the neo-Nazi groups in Ukraine? Is the far right in Germany supporting them, or it's the liberals and the compassionate and these rainbow flag people are supporting them?
Alexander, this is such an interesting point, because this whole narrative, the Ukraine narrative generated in the West, obviously it is having huge detrimental damage on Europe, not to speak of Ukraine. But it's a very interesting strategy, don't you think, to shut down the populist left and shut down the populist right. And it works very perfectly, okay? I mean, we had the COVID example. Now we have this. This is another exercise in being able to control political narratives and political outcomes, I would say.
Absolutely. So when you're looking at countries like Germany, for example, you even have own speech laws which actually prohibit citizens of Germany to be in favor of the special military operation in Ukraine, or even utter positive comments on Russian foreign policy. And if you don't have these special speech laws, like in Germany, for example, in Austria, you don't have them. But if you're looking at the mainstream media, you can see an obvious Gleichschaltung. All the media are following the same narrative. There is no critique of, for example, the Ukrainian government persecuting the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine. There's no critique of the Ukrainian government and some new fascist groups hunting down minorities in Ukraine. And it's really horrible, because you have to think about that most European governments, always, when it comes to the history of fascism or national socialism, say, yes, we have to condemn these movements, we have to condemn their crimes, but if there is now, like today in Ukraine, a real new fascism or a real neo-Nazism, they simply close their eyes and say, no, these people are our allies. How could they ever be against
Ukraine? No, but Alexander, Zelensky's a Jew. So they're no Nazi. This is childish thinking. This is absolutely childish thinking. Okay.
Alexander, they did the same in Syria when they supported these radical terrorists and who were committing ethnic cleansing. They have committed acts of genocide against the minorities in different places. And these people were called moderate rebels. And now the same thing is happening in Ukraine. So it's not about facts. It's about what you push propaganda in the media and repeat this propaganda until enough people believe. But I repeat this argument all the time, but you can lie to the people for a few weeks, probably for a few months. But after a year, and now we're going to the second year of this war, people can, the facts can emerge from the dust, and the people can see that this is not about values, it's not about democracy, etc. So you cannot hide the sunshine forever. It will come up at one point, right? And it's happening now in Ukraine. And this is adding so much pressure on the Zelensky government, because they have high expectations on the armed forces of Ukraine. But at the same time, they are not supplying Ukraine with the amount of weaponry they need. But also we have the issue of the manpower. If you are on an offensive mode, you will need at least three times more manpower to succeed on the on the defenses, right? So it's just crazy. Russia has three times more manpower and not Ukraine. How are they going to do it? So when I say we need peace deal for Ukraine now, I become a Putinist, unfortunately, and this becomes a Russian talking point.
This is the problem with the entire time of this conflict here. There's been no narrative, no push for peace, because the West is always pushing for victory, defeat, a binary. Russia must be defeated, Ukraine must win. Well, As military people tell me, Peter, there's the military math you have to remember. And so Ukraine has zero hope. Let's just be honest here. And one of the things that's happening, I'm glad that Kvirka brought it up, the demographic devastation of Ukraine is unbelievable. According, and the Ukrainians have been always fuzzy about their census reports, because so many people are leaving. And that was before the conflict, okay? Now they're looking at a population half the size they had in 1991. Ukraine, quite literally, is disappearing.
Yes. Actually, I remember at the beginning of the war, they used to say that no more airplanes are left from Moscow, because everybody is running away from the country because they don't want to fight in this war. And now we know, even the Western media says that they're capturing people from the streets, they're sending them to training camps for 5 days. And after 5 days
in Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah. and they're sending them to the front lines. If this is not a meat grinder, then what is it? They don't have the manpower. If they should come to their senses, they should strike a deal with Russia. They cannot rise from this war victorious. You cannot win a war when you don't have an energy independence. Period.
Yeah, but the problem is, Alexander, is that it's been framed as a moral crusade. And so that's what makes it so difficult. I mean, if this was about security, the indivisibility of security as determined by the Helsinki Acts, you know, I don't want to be nerdy here with you guys, but that's really the whole point. I mean, we want a situation where we're secure and you're secure. But the West says, no, there must be regime change in Russia. Well, you know, the Russians have a say in that. The West never gives anyone any real agency. They say they're nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine, but it is nothing about Ukraine. It's about Western hegemonic ambitions. Go ahead, Alexander.
Yeah, exactly. And the very problem is that the West does not view any other people or civilization, which is not the West, as human. So for the West, every African, every Russian, every Chinese is just someone who still has to be taught democracy and human rights.
Joseph Burrell already told us this. You know, he lives in the garden. The rest of us live in the jungle. He said it. Exactly, those are his words.
And this is the centuries old trope of Western enlightenment. So that the barbarians have to be civilized. And I guess if we are looking now at the West, at its hypocrisy, at its crimes, at how he is actually destroying Ukraine and the Ukrainian population, how he's trying to buy up all the natural resources of Ukraine by BlackRock and other companies. You can actually see that the Russians are the barbarians, but that the Western elites are the very barbarians. So I guess the West has to somehow rethink its morals. And what is now more urgent than ever would be Eurasian-wide security architecture, which also includes Russia, China, Iran, and other countries who are actually needed in order to create a stable security.
To create a win-win situation. Yeah, I know it's hard for them to imagine it in the West, but it's possible. I truly believe it. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Berlin and in Vienna. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.